Thank you very much, Gisela. My name is Olivier Capaccio, and I welcome on this call Bruce Konkin, who is the chair of the board governance committee, but also Steve Crocker, who is the chair of the ICANN board. So welcome, gentlemen. I understand you have also a few of your board colleagues along with you as well. Today, of course, we are going to have a discussion about the duties of a board member. That, of course, is needed due to the fact that the ALAC is undergoing the process at the moment to select a board member to elections, to some election process. But anyway, without any further ado, let's hand the floor over. I'm not quite sure whether I should hand it over to Steve first or to Bruce. Probably to Bruce something, that's what it says on the agenda. So, Bruce, you have the floor.
Okay, thank you. Olivia, can you hear me?
Absolutely, very well, thank you.
Okay. The Board Governance Committee was asked by the Nominating Committee to produce some guidance on skill sets that the board recommends for future board directors. And we've provided that same information to the ALAC community as well. I think first and foremost, the board is seeking directors that meet the requirements in the bylaws, which are that the people are of integrity, objectivity and intelligence. People understand the ICANN's mission and the impact ICANN's decisions have. People that have a broad cultural and geographic diversity, people that have familiarity with the operation of domain name registries and registrars, with country name registries and with IP address registries, and also the internet standards and protocols. But very much that's people in the aggregate, so we don't expect every board member to have all of that knowledge, but we'd expect at least some familiarity with one or more of those areas. There is some compensation available to board directors. It's currently the equivalent of US $35,000 a year and an additional $5,000 for a committee chair. And English is the dominant sort of language that's used in both written and spoken form on the board. But obviously it's an advantage if board directors can speak and write in additional languages as well. In addition to those standards that are in the bylaws, we're also looking for directors, again, in aggregate, meaning that not every individual needs to have all these skills. But we are looking for people that have board governance or equivalent experience in a medium-sized organisation. And ICANN now has a budget this year of about $200 million. So it's a pretty substantial organisation compared to 10 years ago. And the board's looking for directors that have had some experience with organisations that are fairly large and complex. So ideally organisations that might be spread across multiple geographic locations, have a range of different cultures operating within the organisation, and I guess a complex set of projects that are being managed at any point in time. Now that experience can come from the private sector, but it can also come from the public sector. This could be people that have had senior university management experience typically have experience that's relevant, or experience at a large international organisation of some sort. Could be a large non-profit organisation with international scope. So certainly don't need to be purely from either the private or public sector. We do like to see directors that have some experience with non-profit organisations, because non-profit, the objectives are a little different to typical commercial for-profit organisations, and there's a strong public benefit mandate that ICANN has. And then experience working effectively in meetings where the board is actually distributed in multiple locations and time zones. So very similar to ALAC. You know, board's got 20-odd people. Any telephone call involves people having to put up with either late night or early morning phone calls. Now, in addition to those sort of more concrete hard skills, there are a lot of soft skills that are required on the board, and these are the ability to engage in dialogue and express an opinion in a way that's not overpowering. You're not trying to overpower people, you're just trying to contribute your experience and opinion. Try to be a good listener, so not just be good at sort of telling people your experience, but being good at listening to others, and that's very important, to have good listening skills. Members should be able to express themselves in a way that demonstrates respect for the other board members, and especially some experience in dealing with diverse cultures. Quite often you might have people that have been on a board where all the board members are their friends and they all come from the same school or same area, and they're going to be very aligned from a cultural and personality perspective, whereas the board has directors from all around the world. Different cultures express themselves differently, and board members need to have definitely a tolerance and hopefully a passion for working with people from different cultures. So that, I think, is probably all I would say, Olivia, in terms of general skills. The other question that we often get asked is about the time commitment. And I might ask Steve Crocker just to comment on that generally, just how much time is required for a board member to actively participate in the activities of the board.
Is that my cue? I guess it is. This is Steve Crocker. Thank you very much. Bruce, very cogent, very thorough. Thank you. Let me take the opportunity to speak not only about the time commitment, but one or two other things. With respect to time commitment, it is unquestionably a substantial time commitment. There's a lot of material to read and keep up with. From a travel point of view, the minimum amount of travel is 3 ICANN meetings per year, and that means typically arriving sometime between Wednesday and at latest Friday of the week before, and then staying through at least Thursday of the ICANN week, is the way things are set up now. And depending upon where one is coming from, that can often mean a day or a day plus of travel on each end. Then we have, in addition to that, 3 retreats per year, typically a few weeks or sometimes several weeks prior to each of the ICANN meetings. And those are 3 days of meeting and then whatever travel time it takes to get there. So with nothing else, and there frequently are other meetings of one sort or another that individual board members will go to, that is a non-trivial amount of travel. And then we have committees, and a great deal of the work of the board is done within the committees. That is the major invention of how to get more work done than if we were all meeting as a group all the time. And these committees are quite substantive. The Finance Committee, for example, delves into the details of the budget, oversees the budget process. There is an even more demanding committee, the Audit Committee. At least my view is that it's more demanding, in that not only does it have to understand the budget process, but also has to understand the oversight mechanisms, and some of that involves special knowledge that one either knows coming in or has to learn quickly by reading and by talking to the various experts, including our auditors. The board is generally responsible for making sure that the direction that the organization is moving in is the correct one and that the processes are being followed. And it has, of course, specific and direct responsibility for evaluating the performance of the CEO and the ombudsman. So that's an interesting small detail that that we have two people who report directly to the board. Everybody else reports to somebody else. All the staff reports up to the CEO. The board is not supposed to be involved in originating policy. That is the responsibility of the supporting organizations and ALAC, I should say, through the bottoms-up multi-stakeholder process. So even though the board is often viewed as setting the direction or making decisions, we try hard not to do that. That doesn't mean we're not actively involved in understanding what's going on, and on occasion, if we see that things are going around in circles or are deeply broken, that we need to step in and do something about it. Doing something about it means fixing the process, not dictating an answer. So how much time does that amount to? The numbers are too big to be, I mean, anytime somebody's looked at the actual numbers, everybody recoils in horror. Nominally, it's about a quarter time. In practice, it can easily be a half time. The amount of money that is provided to board members is not nearly enough to reimburse on a fair basis for the labor that's put in, given the skill level. I want to I'll come to a close in a second, but I want to emphasize and expand on a point that that Bruce has made. We operate on behalf of the organization and on behalf of the Internet as a whole. We draw our members, the board members, from a variety of sources. Obviously, the purpose of this call is with respect to ALAC, but also from the supporting organizations and from the nominations committee. That said, even though it's very important to have this diverse representation and to have representatives, if you will, from each major group, the board is not a parliament, and we don't expect individual board members to act solely on behalf of the organization that selected them. The primary responsibility, and quite explicitly, is that each board member, no matter where they come from, operates, conducts himself as a member of the board of the whole. Of the whole organization, and no specific issue belongs to any board member, nor should any board member view himself as belonging to one particular constituency. So one of our strengths is that I think almost all of us involve ourselves and take very, very seriously each of the various things. So in some cases, there are issues that require a fair amount of technical knowledge, but it won't just be somebody who's come from the technical community who is capable of speaking about that. On social issues, equally, every board member is equal in that regard, not just for the sake of discussion, somebody coming from ALAC. So I'll pause there and turn the floor back over to the chair.
Thank you very much, Steve, and thank you very much, Bruce, for this extensive introduction. Very, very helpful indeed. My name is Olivier Capanabon. So now we are going to go into the next part of our call, which is going to be the questions and answers. And in this part of the call, I invite everyone to ask their questions or contribute more. I know we have several other board members that are on this call as well, and if they have any other experience to share with us, I of course encourage them to do so. I think to start off on the question side of things, I had a question for all the members that are there, but perhaps directed mostly at Steve. The at-large leadership team, what used to be the executive committee, invites you and has invited other members of the board to speak to them on the Friday morning. And there has been a question as to the ability for individual board members to go and speak to communities, whether it is the at-large community or other parts of the community, perhaps engaging in discussions in the GNSO. Also a question with regards to board members taking part in GNSO working groups or taking part in at-large consultations. Are there any requisites regarding this? Are there any guidelines? Are there any restrictions for board members to engage at this level? And I'm not sure who wishes to answer this question, and I hope I can be heard correctly.
Well, I'll go first. This is Crocker. This is Crocker. I want Bruce to take that.
Okay. Look, Olivia, no, there are no restrictions in terms of general participation. There are some bylaw restrictions that I'm aware of in that a voting director on the board can't be a voting member of a supporting organisation, for example. So when I was chair of the GNSO, I resigned from the chair of the GNSO role to take on the role as a board director. But that's really in a voting official capacity. But in terms of participation, contributing to mailing lists, being engaged in working groups, there's no actual bylaws restriction. I think generally board members take a more of a listening approach with a lot of these forums because they want to be sort of fairly impartial when advice ultimately reaches the board, but there's no actual restriction on board members contributing their knowledge within their community, and in many cases that happens.
Okay, thank you very much. And so we have Ray Polzak in the queue. Ray, you have the floor.
Yes, it's Ray Polzak. I'd like to echo what Bruce has said. Matter of participation, board members do have to be careful, as Bruce said, because in the end they have to be impartial because they may have to vote on the matter that's being discussed. And so they have to tread a fine line between actively enlisting and providing comment if appropriate, but at the same time they can't be viewed as being a protagonist or antagonist in the group. So it's a fine line that they have to draw so that they don't create a conflict of interest or a perceived conflict of interest when the matter comes before the board. So generally, it's good for board members to participate as it allows them to really hear what's going on, and it's good for them to actively listen. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ray. And next is Steve Crocker.
Thank you. Let me expand and be quite pointed about this impartiality. As everyone on this call knows full well, we're all living in an environment in which we're being examined in minute detail, and everybody is looking for a way to criticize. There's a huge emphasis on ethics and conflict of interest issues. I would counsel anyone who is seeking a seat on the board to have two things in mind. One is that no matter how much they might think that they can keep their regular jobs and regular life apart from ICANN, people who are looking at us will not make those distinctions. And so every action, every utterance that we make, no matter how much we precede it by this isn't official or I'm only speaking in personal capacity, that will tend to be set aside. The second thing that I think is very important is that we have to be very comfortable in our own situations and view ourselves as being of service to the community there's quite a lot of sensitivity about whether any of us are using our position to better our own self, looking for opportunities either during or after board service. And so I would hope that everybody who serves is not either actively or sometimes unconsciously acting in a way that is using the position or being seen to use the position in some way that seems self-serving. And I know from personal interaction with each and every person on the board that that's not the case, but I also know that appearances sometimes are a lot harsher than what the realities are.
Okay, thank you very much, Steve. And then we can have it now speaking. Any other questions? Okay, I don't see anyone put their hand up. I have another question, just to let everyone else be a bit more inspired, I guess. It is early for some of our, some people in our committee and late for others. And others are currently digesting their lunch or barely digesting it. The issue of the board conflict of interest has is something that has arisen a few years ago, and at some point there was a total uproar about conflicts on the board and so on, and I understand that there have been several steps which were taken so as to partition, I guess, the board into those members that are not conflicted and those that are conflicted. And I just wanted to sort of find out how was that brought about, and how what was the process by which the decision was made on board members being conflicted or not?
Yeah, Bruce, let me speak briefly to this and then turn it over to you. So conflict of interest is a broad term. It's a term that covers a broad set of things. What you're referring to, Olivier, is the creation of a subset of the board, which we call the new GTLD Program Committee, and the criterion for being a member of that committee is that one is not conflicted with respect to GTLD decisions. There are other situations that come up where there could be different conflicts. So we have, as a general principle, at each and every juncture, identifying whether or not there is a conflict of interest or a potential or apparent conflict of interest, and depending upon what the issue is, board members sometimes recuse themselves from that. In the case of the GTLD Program Committee, that was a broad set of activities that we knew was going to come up repeatedly. And so rather than having to deal with the issue at each and every motion, we set up a sort of batch mechanism, if you will, so that we could deal with that on a regular basis. Do you want to say more, Bruce?
Yes, that's right, Steve. Yeah, I think exactly right in the sense, Olivia, there's no such thing as a conflicted board member in a general sense. We don't have conflicted and non-conflicted board members. We have board members that may be conflicted on a particular topic or issue. And in this case, with the new GTLD, because there were so many decisions that could affect multiple GTLD applicants, we decided to just form a committee for efficiency purposes. But that committee will probably cease its existence, I'd imagine, by the AGM of this year, and you know, we'd go back to normal board issues. If there was a specific case of a individual GTLD that maybe there was a compliance issue or a GTLD was seeking a change in their particular agreement, then that we would then look at that individual case and decide whether particular board members were conflicted or not, which could be a completely different set of board members to those that are on or not on the new GTLD committee. Another comment just about conflicts is that we've identified several different levels of conflict. There's what we call a direct conflict of interest, where there's usually a direct financial incentive to make a particular decision. So, for example, if we were approving a lease of a building and a board member owned that building, there's a direct financial conflict of interest in that situation. If we were awarding a contract to a company that a board member worked in, then again, you know, that's a fairly direct conflict. The other class of conflict, which is actually the one that has been, as Steve says, a bigger issue for us, is deception of conflict. And that is where a board member might say, well, I'm not getting any money for this transaction, nor do I expect to. But we might look as an outside observer that there could be a perception that that person has a conflict, and that perception could damage the reputation of ICANN. And in that case, in some cases, such as some of the new GTLD decisions, we've identified people that we think there would be a perception of conflict. So they're not getting paid or there's no financial benefit to them, but we think there would be a perception if they were involved in a decision and have recommended that they not be involved in that particular matter. And then the third level of conflict is what we recall as a future conflict. And a future conflict could be where you know as a board member, you might be applying for a job at a particular company and the ICANN is dealing with a decision relating to that company, then you as a board director might declare that and say, look, there's a decision about this organisation. I don't have a job with this organisation, but I have applied. And so I could have a future conflict in that if I did get that job, the perception would be that I set myself up to make a decision to help me get that job. So there are the three types of conflict: direct sort of financial conflict, a perception of conflict, and a future conflict. And we look at all three of those issues for each major decision that the board makes.
Thank you very much, Bruce. I see that we now have Olga Madruga 40 in the queue. Olga, you have the floor.
Yes, hello, can you hear me? This is Olga Madruga 40.
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, okay. Thank you. First of all, thanks for the opportunity to meet with you today. You have a very tough task to make these choices and really evaluate all of your candidates. It's not an enviable position, but a very important one. I just wanted to share with you really what works regarding the wonderful board that I have the honor of contributing to right now. And some of that we've already talked about with Bruce and with Steve, but just to give you a little flavor of how each one of the elements that they talked about have to be balanced, and balanced by you and your choosing. For example, just in terms of diversity, the amount of work, and public interest. On the topic of diversity, diversity on the board is very important because that's what gives us that richness of opinions that allow us to come up with the best decisions and work product possible. So if you were to kind of check the box and look for the various qualities that are obvious in what's needed in a board member, it's very difficult because in checking the box, you could come up with just one kind of individual demographically. For example, the English proficiency, which is very important. The technical background, which leads us to a community of technical experts around the world, etc. So if you balance that and look for overall qualities, but keeping in mind that diversity that's important on the board, that's when you make your best choices. And I know on the topic of stamina, Steve talked about the time commitment, and that is, it can be significant. There's a lot of material that you have to read, digest, and formulate an opinion, and you have to do all of that studying so that you can steadfastly and honestly hold up an opinion that might be a little different, etc. Now, in choosing someone that can make that time commitment, you also have to balance the fact that the board has a good mix of people who are very active in their professions and they're either in corporations, several in law practices, and others that have the ability to contribute more of their time because they have already experienced thriving careers. And that balance is very important, too. So the time commitment that is needed is more perhaps a question of the discipline and the time commitment that someone is willing to carve out, and not necessarily that they don't have other responsibilities, because that's a richness that is important. Lastly, I wanted to talk about the public interest aspect of the special choice that you are making. And that's a matter of balance also, because all of us on the board have first and foremost the responsibility to make decisions that are in the public interest of the organization as a whole. In the particular case of a representative chosen by ALAC, there will be instances where a special responsibility falls on that director to highlight a public interest or at-large consideration that could be missed. So the individual needs to be able to make a careful balance of knowing that they must always decide and advise in the interest of the entire organization, but kind of be vigilant to any special considerations that could be overlooked or needed to be highlighted regarding the particular community that has chosen them. So I hope that gives just a little more detail and flavor to how it is that we manage to have such a wonderful balance right now on the board.
Thank you very much, Olga. Thank you for this very candid input as to your experiences on the board and all of the qualities of what a board member requires and the amount of time that it takes to be on the board. We now have a question, or a comment from Rinalia Abdul-Rahim.
Thank you, Olivier. This is Rinalia Abdul-Rahim. I have a question pertaining to something that Steve Crocker mentioned in a past meeting, and I cannot recall whether it was together with the ALAC, but it probably was. And it has to do about the peculiarity of the ICANN board members are somehow required to do outreach. Now ICANN has a global stakeholder engagement team, and the expectation the outreach responsibilities would probably lessen. But there is probably still some requirement to do so, and I'd like to hear some thoughts on how much of the board members' time would be allocated for that. Thank you.
Thank you, Rinalia. I'm not sure who's going to answer that.
This is Steve Crocker. I'd like to respond briefly, but I'd like to also call on my colleagues on the board to speak to this. There is actually no formal requirement for board members to do outreach. There is a very natural tendency, I think, for many board members to want to do this. And in the past, when ICANN was in a less robust state, had many fewer people on the staff, board members often pitched in, as they did in some other functions as well. And then to state what I think is an important and obvious point, we have quite a lot of skill, talent, and points of contact within the board, so that it is often helpful for board members to participate in outreach. But that's an additional activity that is optional on both the part of the organization and on the part of the board member. Let me ask my colleagues, and Olga, let me start with you, and then perhaps Ray and Bruce can speak to this as well.
I'm fine, Steve. Ray, do you have any comments?
Just one. Echoing what Steve said, that this is
really an optional thing as far as working outside of the board. This is actually work by a board member and not work of the board. And it's important for board members to be knowledgeable about what's going on outside of the realm of an ICANN meeting. Having said that, though, it's equally important that board members don't put themselves in the way of staff. And because, as Steve's pointed out, staff is the one that's engaged, is engaging in these activities, and rightfully so. And there are certain circumstances and certain past associations that Steve has mentioned that are probably important to maintain. So it becomes more importantly in this case for board members, again, to be in a, where they do participate, to be in an active listening mode and not necessarily being members of panels at meetings or being being on the platform, and to actually pick and choose and look to what that organization, that conference or whatever it is that they're attending, what their goal and purpose is and how it would fit into the overall ICANN agenda. So it's a very soft issue, if you will. It definitely is not a requirement for board members to attend any other meetings outside of the ICANN sphere, but on the other hand, it can be useful. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ray. Thank you for the initial words. Steve, I think you'd mentioned you were going to ask other of your colleagues perhaps to answer the questions. I know there are several people in the queue, so maybe, I don't know if we go back to the queue or if any other board members would like to continue contributing.
Go through the board members, I would have thought.
Yeah, Olga?
Sure. Just Rinalia, you ask a very good question, because there's been a lot of discussion of late regarding what does this mean, outreach, etc. And I think we are all in interpreting it at this point, now that there is a thriving staff of very talented people at ICANN that do their day-to-day work correctly. It's that board members, we can't be in some kind of absolute bubble, for example, and we have to stay practically informed regarding what are the opinions in the community, what's happening in the community, so that we can give the best advice and come to the best decisions possible. And because of conflicts issues, because of appearance issues, you have to temper that with complete impartiality. But it is very important for us to go out there and be informed. And sometimes it's as simple as, for example, here in Buenos Aires, we might gather a few folks before an important ICANN meeting and just listen to what's been happening in the region, and maybe do the same in Montevideo or regarding other travel and professional experiences around the world. So that's the way that outreach has kind of evolved with the very talented ICANN staff that we can count on now. But you do have to stay plugged in, shall we say, with what's happening in the community.
And thank you. Let me just note that Chris is also on the call and may want to have something to say on this.
I'm happy to listen, Steve. Thanks.
Thanks. Back to you.
Okay, thank you very much, Steve. Let's get back to our queue, and we have in order Alan Greenberg and then Cheryl Langdonor. So let's start with Alan Greenberg. Alan, you have the floor.
Thank you. I don't have a question, but rather a comment. I've sat in on a number of these discussions before, and I want to compliment the board members that I've heard speak so far. What we've gotten is a far richer and more nuanced version of what is expected of a board member than I've heard before or seen written before, and I want to thank you all. And I was particularly taken by Olga's comment at the end of her first intervention on the balance between a director working on behalf of the good of the organization at the same time being vigilant, and I like that word, on issues from wherever they came. So I think I benefited from listening, and I thought I knew it all, but thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Alan. Next is Cheryl Mangdenor. Cheryl?
Thank you, Olivia. Cheryl, for the record, but as I see, Roberto is also in the queue, and he's the chair of the board's candidate evaluation committee. I'll switch spots with him because mine's a process question. Thank you.
Cheryl, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you too well. It was a bit muffled again for me.
Wow. Okay. Is that any better? I'm now eating the microphone.
That's a lot better.
Okay.
Don't eat too much of it. Sorry. Maybe it's on my side as well.
Thank you. It's Cheryl again for the record, and it probably is on your side, Olivia. I like to blame you for things. I was going to say, because Roberto is also in the queue, and he's the chair of the Board Candidate Evaluation Committee, I would go after him, as mine is more of a process question.
Okay, thank you, and I'm sorry that I didn't hear that, since it was quite straightforward. Roberto, you have the floor. And you might be muted at the moment, Roberto. Star 7 to unmute? I think we can't hear Roberto at the moment, so maybe Cheryl, you might wish to speak whilst Roberto tries and work out the problems he might have on his side. Roberto, I think maybe Roberto could be typing the problem you've got on the chat, and I'll let staff work with him, work something out. Cheryl, back to you.
Thanks, Olivia. Cheryl, for the transcript record. See what happens when I try and be polite. I'll just stop doing that. And it's probably a good segue for this question. It's probably more for Bruce in his capacity as chair of the Board Governance Committee, but I'll just toss it to probably any of the board members. But my guess is it's your answer, Bruce. I'm very aware, as everyone on this call is, that we have only had one experience and one term with having someone represented as a selectee from our community of at large on the ICANN board. And we all know seat 15 is a hard one and much much desired seat. I'm wondering how we know as a community, and perhaps the ALAC does, and that's why I'm asking it of Bruce, how our incumbent and indeed future board members are faring. Are they a team player? Is their voice effective? When the board does, and I know the board does do, peer review, how is that information coming back to the electorate with all courtesy and privacy considerations, I suppose, but specifically for the person that the at-large community wants to put up there? We need to know that they are effective. So I was under the impression that the board still does peer review, and I'm somewhat concerned to know that, if it still does, and it has, whether or not the electorate, which is the 15-person ALAC and the single leadership from each of the RALOs, has had access to whatever feedback on Sebastian's performance is available. Thank you.
Okay, well, let me sort of give a process answer to a process question. Yes, Cheryl, you know as chair of the nominating committee that we do have a process for evaluating board members, and we set this in process a year ago, originally for the nominating committee that was asking for feedback on board members, and we wanted to have a structured way of providing that feedback rather than what was probably happening, which was more hearsay, where individual members of the nominating committee would talk to individual board members and ask for opinions. So we did put in a 360-degree review process, which we provided feedback to the 2013 nominating committee, And then as a result of initiating that process, we also agreed to make that offer available to the other supporting organisations and advisory committees. So this year we reviewed four board members, including Sebastian. The process took longer than I had anticipated. We selected the evaluators. The people that we get to do the evaluation are board members that have chaired either the board or a committee in which the board member is on. Board members that have typically been a member of a committee that the board member is on, and also staff that have typically supported a committee in which the board member is active. So that's why we refer to it as 360, in that there is somebody that has been the chair of a group that the board member's on, somebody that's been a member of the group the board member's been on, and staff that have supported that board member. So we've done that for each of the board members, including Sebastian. This year, we gave each board member three options. That board member could elect not to have the 360 degree report passed on to their appointing body, or the board member could submit their own response to the 360 degree report, or the board member could simply allow the 360 report to be transmitted. In the case of Sebastian, I don't think the process is complete with respect to whether he's decided to have the report released or not, although I have informed Olivia of the report and the status of it.
Olivia, if I may just in reply to that, so let me be very clear.
Absolutely, sure. You may follow up if you wish to.
Yes, I do, because this is a hugely important issue. It's an incredibly important tool, and I, for one, was not aware that these options, and I'm going to put those in inverted commas, were in practice. So let me be clear. If the community of electorate, in other words, the ALAC and the five RALO leads who hold the vote, are not aware and have not got access to the existing 360, assuming it has been completed for Sebastian.
It has been completed, yes.
Thank you, Bruce. Then that is the only reason that is not in existence is because the current sitting board member for seat 15 has requested it not to be. I just want to be really clear. If that's the case, I understand it. If it's not the case, I just want to be clear. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. Bruce, any comments on this?
Look, I have not actually received a response from Sebastian personally saying not to release the report. Sebastian has told me that he wanted to seek a call with the organisation that did the evaluation, and I believe he's done that. And then I think he was considering his action. So unless he's informed Olivia, that's as far as I know its status.
Okay, thank you very much, Bruce. And I can confirm that I have been speaking to Sebastian, and there'll be a follow-up by email later on today or later on in the week, and certainly before the first round of voting takes place. So let's continue on the questions. In the meantime, whilst everyone on the call, and I note that there are a lot of people on the call now, so it looks as though this is getting more and more popular by the minute, there was a note that came in from Roberto Gaetano. Since he had some technical problems, I understand he might have not been able to fix those. But for the record, and for those people who are not on the Adobe Connect, Roberto mentioned a small comment. He believes that a board member can generally have access to information that is confidential and has to commit to this confidentiality. With regard to the correct management for information and the access only on a need-to-know basis is intercorrelated with the conflict of interest as information can be used for personal purposes. Bruce, is there anything to add to this?
Olivia, you're asking me about the confidentiality?
Correct, yes. The access to information that is confidential, commitment from board members to confidentiality, and the access to only on a need-to-know basis to some information that board members might be subjected to know.
Well, basically, board members have access to all the information as they request it. That's their fiduciary right. In terms of confidentiality of how that's handled, typically we have a board mailing list and people share personal opinions on that mailing list, and the general rule is that you don't sort of post people's comments that's on a mailing list publicly. With respect to board meetings, the resolutions are made public and the briefing materials are made public, but the board members get to see that information prior to it being public, and they have an opportunity to request corrections and ask staff to do further work on particular papers if needed. So again, we ask board members not to do their own publication of board materials, but to wait until the staff officially publish the material on the website. And generally the way I deal with it personally, Olivia, is if a member of the community asks me for a particular piece of information, I first check to see if it's public. If it is, I send a link to that information. If it's not public, I'll often just ask staff either to make it public or to provide a reason why it's not being made public. But ultimately, it's really for the staff to publish the material rather than board members to sort of take it upon themselves to post our briefing materials or minutes and things before they're ready.
Okay, thank you very much, Bruce. Now we have Ray Pilzak in the queue. Ray, you have the floor.
Thank you, Olivier. Going to Roberto's second comment about intercorrelated conflict of interest, whose information can be used for personal purposes. I think it, and with the preceding comment, and then also the remarks that Bruce just made, I think it's also important to know that board members, to use a colloquial phrase, shouldn't be speaking out of school with regards to confidential information and not giving up what's really going on inside type information where this information may be confidential. So I think it's very, very important that board members speak to the published material and they can express certain degrees of opinions, but at some point in time, the obligation to the board member is that if they have disagreed with an opinion that the board voted on, at some point in time, their loyalty has to be to the opinion of the board, because that is the board's opinion about decision with regards to the direction and benefit of the organization. And so I think that is something as well that needs to be considered when talking about providing information. And so this is the hallway conversations, the dinner time chats, and so forth. Thank you.
Yeah, just one other further comment too, Olivia, which is often for those that have been a bit more involved in public company boards and things, but there's also often material, particularly around new GTLDs, a requirement for all members of the community to have access to the information at the same time. And typically public companies, they officially post the information to the stock market. Once they've done that, then they can talk about the information, but they can't give privileged information to particular members of the industry and not others. And that's another reason for a number of the material topics that we deal with are commercially sensitive, and really it should be published on our site, and then it's available to everybody at the same time, rather than individual board members releasing bits and pieces of information.
Thank you very much, Bruce. Some of you speaking. So we have reached the top of the hour already, and I thought we would just spend about 30, 35 minutes discussing these issues. So I'm very glad that there's been much engagement and much
discussion going on. Last call for any last question or last comments from you or from Steve or any board members? I don't see anyone put their hand up, so I gather that there's nothing else that we need to speak about. The next steps that we now have is the actual election taking place. I will ask, do we have Tijani who is on the call at the moment? Yes, Tijani is on the call. Tijani, would you be able to lead us to what we're doing next, please? Just a minute, quickly. And just to explain, Tijani is our board selection, board member selection process committee chair. So he knows, he effectively is our shepherd with regards to our next steps in running the election. Tijani, you have the floor.
Okay, thank you. Do you hear me? Olivier, do you hear me?
Absolutely. Hello? We can hear you. Go ahead.
Olivier, do you hear me?
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
Affirmative.
Thank you. Yes, the next step will be the first round of election, which will happen on 16th of March. This round will have as an objective to reduce the number of candidates from 5 to 3. So we will drop 2 of them in the first round. And then the second round will happen face-to-face in Singapore. We will have the vote on Sunday. And if we manage to have one of the candidates, the three remaining candidates, having more than 50% of the votes, the casted votes, we will declare him winner or her winner. And if we don't manage to have this, we will do another round of voting on Wednesday, and hopefully we will break the tie, and we will have, if there is a tie, and we will have the winner by Wednesday.
Okay, thank you very much, Tijani. And with all of this, we now know what we're doing next. We know the duties of a board director, and we know a heck of a lot more now than we knew an hour ago on what it actually means to be a board director. I thank all of you, and thank you very much, Bruce, and thank you, Steve, and Ray, and Olga, and all the other board members that I'm not mentioning who have been on the call. Thanks to all of the attendees. And look forward to a very, very good election and a good rest of the week. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night, everybody. This call is now adjourned. Bye-bye.
Good night, Olivia.
Thanks, everybody. That was
bye-bye.
Good. Really, really good call. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. The meeting has been adjourned and the audio will now be disconnected. Thank you for joining today's call.